The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Well, welcome to a Friday. It is Friday, so we got that going for us. I apologize for not being here yesterday. I had all good intentions. I was planning on doing a show, as I do 5 days a week on a normal week. And here's what happened yesterday, just to lay it all on. I can talk now without crying, I think. But yesterday, that was not the case, and I figured you didn't need me here just sobbing, you know, in my own little pity party. But so, and the thing is, Howie Klein, you know, it was Thursday. Howie was supposed to be here, and we had a guest booked, and we had a miscommunication in his scheduling. And so he had to, the guest had to cancel. Actually, it was Tom Nelson, who's running for Senate from Wisconsin. Just we got our wires crossed, and he was doing a shoot for a TV ad. And, you know, shit happens. So besides the fact that I spent all day on the phone going back and forth between Florida Blue, that is my health insurance extortionist, and the pharmaceutical company that manufactures these patches that I use, that I've used for probably at least the last 5 years, more than that, maybe 10 years. I don't know how long I've been using these patches, but a long, long time. And this is the tale of the problem with our health. I want to say health care system, but it's a system of not of care. It's a system of insurance and money and profit. And healthcare should not be a for-profit venture. It just shouldn't. The profit motive needs to be removed from our healthcare, period. And until we do that, Americans are overpaying, and those of us who can't afford to pay don't get treated. So here's the deal. I suffer from something called restless leg syndrome. I know some comedians, Bill Maher, make jokes about it. It's not a joke. It is a neurological issue. It is related to Parkinson's. And the reason I know that is because the drugs that help mitigate the symptoms, nothing cures it, but the drugs that help stop the symptoms are drugs given to patients suffering from Parkinson's disease. It is a neurological disorder for which I see a neurologist, right? So, and how it manifests itself is in mostly at night, but it can happen at other times during the day, but it's mostly at night. When I try to lie down, sometimes when I even just try to sit, I get this sensation running down my legs, through my legs. It's not, it almost feels like there are creatures crawling inside my legs. And the only way to stop them is by getting up, standing, or walking around. In fact, I believe there's a book about restless leg syndrome sufferers called Night Walkers. So what happens is when it's really bad, I don't sleep. And there have been times that I've gone for days being unable to sleep. There are times that I've fallen asleep standing in the living room behind the couch. And if I wasn't standing behind the sofa to catch me when I nod off and fall forward, I would have just fallen on the ground because I have fallen asleep standing up. I'm so tired. So those who say, well, take a sleeping pill, doesn't happen. It doesn't work. I am exhausted, but I cannot sit or lie down because the sensation's so strong that I've got to stand up and move around. It is debilitating. And I've suffered with this since 1997. So it's been a long time. So I've tried all the medications. There are two pills. The first one that came out was called Requip. Requip, I used for a while, and then I started getting horrible side effects. It made me horribly nauseous. I mean, really nauseous. So I couldn't function. And you have to take it early enough in the evening because you're supposed to take it before the symptoms hit. So you got to take it around 6 o'clock so that by bedtime, it's kicked in before the symptoms normally take over. The next medication they came up with is called Mirapex. Similar side effects. I get really nauseated by it and I can't take it. So some years ago, one of the pharmaceutical companies came up with this patch. It's called Neupro, N-E-U-P-R-O. And it's supposed to be at really tiny doses, but I guess I've got a high tolerance for medication because I use the highest prescribable dose, which is 8 milligrams. And it's a patch and you put it on every day. And the cost for this is about $800 a month. I know. Really? The pills, by the way, are affordable. You know, I can get it with a $10 copay. But I can't tolerate them. So I use these patches. Now, thankfully, the manufacturer of this particular drug has a savings program that will lower my copay to $10, which is what has worked for me for the last few years. It's how I've been able to get this medication, $10 a month copay with my insurance. Well, two things happened. Like the perfect storm. So one is my insurance company, Flotta Blue, lessened their contribution to this medication. So my responsibility goes up a bit, not that much. But the way the benefit works through the savings card is they basically give you $1,500 throughout the course of the year to subsidize your copay. So while it's gotten me through the year in previous years, no such luck this time. Because the first month I put it in January, they filled the prescription, they put $700 of that $1,500 benefit toward my deductible. Because until you pay the deductible, you pay full freight. So great, this benefit went to paying my deductible, but it knocked out half of the funds available. So now we're in April, and the rest of the $1,500 that is available for my subsidy for this year is used up. So when we went to refill the prescription for this month, they told me, well, my copay is $44. And when I went through all my conversations yesterday, I found out because that's how much is left of the original $1,500. So now I don't know if it's going to be I have to pay the full $700 or $800, or I pay, you know, what the price that my insurance company gives me, which is probably around $400. Either way, whether it's $400 a month or $800 a month, that's simply money I don't have. And therefore, when I run out of the current patches I have, I don't know how I'm going to sleep again. So that's where I was yesterday, and it was fresh. Look, I'm already getting emotional about it because this not being able to sleep sucks. If you've been kept awake for any extended amount of time, you know how debilitating it is. And the thing is, our for-profit health insurance system is government-sanctioned extortion, period. Because if you don't have insurance, then, sure, I'd go to the pharmacy and my cost would be about $800 for a month's prescription of this stuff. With my insurance, they lower it because they pay something towards it, not nearly enough. But so maybe that's why the $1,500 lasted me through the year in previous years. It won't this year. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I really don't. I'm just not as freaked out as I was yesterday. And then on top of it, I've been having lower back problems, and I usually don't. My back problems are usually my upper back and neck, but maybe it was the stress. But by the time, you know, bedtime rolled around last night, I could barely walk. I couldn't stand or sit. So I'm wearing a brace right now. My back is in agony. And I'm sure it's all related. And, you know, this is where I am. Now, check this out. You know, there are other medications I take. You know, I take Prozac. I've told you about that. And I take levothyroxine, which is for thyroid issues. There are now, new pharmacies that have popped up online that are a lot less expensive than even going through your insurance company. So, for instance, because so many of us take thyroid supplements, thyroid medication, they don't cover levothyroxine. So I got my 3-month supply yesterday, and it cost me $22. Now, that doesn't sound too bad when you think about it, but I decided just for the hell of it to try, check out what it would cost on some of these new pharmacy sites. So, you know, Amazon, and I know it's Amazon, but Amazon has a pharmacy. It's a low-cost pharmacy. So that's one place you can look. And then the other is Mark Cuban, of all people. Mark Cuban launched an online pharmacy. It's called Cost Plus Drugs, costplusdrugs.com. So check this out. The generic for Prozac is called Fluoxetine. The retail price for a 30-day supply of say 10 milligram Fluoxetine is $3.90 through this pharmacy. Now, I take 40 milligrams a day, 20 or 40. I forget. It's on the prescription. But anyway, even a 20 milligram 30-day supply is $3.90. At Amazon, it's a little bit more expensive, but if you have Prime, you don't pay for shipping. With Mark Cuban's thing, costplusdrugs.com, you pay a flat $5 shipping fee. It turns out it makes Amazon just a little cheaper because I don't pay for the shipping. The same thing with the levothyroxine. It's the same issue. Levothyroxine, generic for Synthroid. I take 112 micrograms. For a 30-day supply, it's $4.20. 90-day supply, $6.60. I paid $22 to the pharmacy yesterday. So we're finding there are these other avenues we can use, right? So this is exciting. So I look up Nupro. Sorry, no results for Nupro on Mark on Cost Plus Drugs. So let's look at Amazon, right? Amazon Pharmacy. And so let me go in there and see. Let me put in my Nupro patch. Yeah. Okay. So here we go. Nupro. And I bring it up. And I just wrote in Nupro, and it's got all the different milligram choices. So let me click on 8 milligram, 24 hours. And it is, drum roll, please, $777.50 for a month. The retail price being $822.60. I'm screwed. So that's the bottom line. So again, there's no reason for this. So Howie Klein, who I had to call yesterday and say, sorry, we're just not going to do a show today. And I told him what was going on. And he said, I think that, why are we buffering? I don't know why YouTube is buffering all of a sudden. Really? Oh my goodness. Never a dull moment. So, So Jay Colley in the chat room, right? You take 30 milligrams of Prozac a day, 90 of the 10 milligram pills are just $5.70. Yes. Yes. This is the way to go, either through Amazon or costplusdrugs.com. Mark Cuban, who knew he was going to be a hero like this, right? So anyway, I call Howie and he's like, well, you know, Howie suffered from a very rare, horrible form of cancer. He's in remission now, but he still takes a lot of drugs that are prohibitively expensive here. He has somebody in Mexico who buys them for him at a much cheaper rate. So he said, give me your information. Let me see what I can get him for in Mexico. So I'm waiting to see. But this is, you know, we shouldn't have to be in this position. And somebody in the chat room yesterday suggested maybe I start up a GoFundMe. Well, let me tell you this. If I could raise $800 a month, I needed to support myself. See, this show is my job. And I think I put out good shows every day. I work hard at it and I take pride in my work. I'm not great at the monetizing end of it. I don't like asking for money. So if I were to do a GoFundMe for $800 a month, the last thing I want to do is turn it over to a fucking pharmaceutical company who's milking us for every cent we've got when I could use it for living expenses, because frankly, I'm hurting right now. So, you know, it's the catch-22. And we shouldn't have to have GoFundMes to pay for our medical care, to pay for the obscene profits made by the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies. Shouldn't have to. So that's why I was off the air yesterday, and that's what's on my mind now, and it's probably why my back is in sheer agony. No, there. So you'll love this. So Sandy in the chat room asks, is there a generic yet? No, there is no generic. And to make matters worse, when I called yesterday, I called the insurance company who has a separate, like a subcontractor who deals with the pharmacy stuff. And I'm talking to this woman who's like, oh, but there are generics. I said, no, there's no generic for this patch. Ma'am, there are generics. And she starts reading me down the list. Carbidopa, levodopa. And I sort of chuckled. I said, yes. And if you look at the drugs that I take, you'll see that I take carbidopa, levodopa. It is not a generic for this patch. It's a generic for a drug called Sinemet. And I take it. It's one of the prescriptions I get every month. It's not a generic for this patch. And she said, well, there are others. And she reads off the generic name for Requip. And I said, ma'am, again, not a generic for this patch. It's a generic for a drug called Requip, which makes me nauseous. And I said, and I'll save you trouble. You're also going to see a generic for a drug called Mirapex. Also not for this patch, but for another drug to treat restless leg syndrome that I cannot tolerate. And she laughed. She actually laughed. And of course, I go into I want to speak with the supervisor. So I talk with the supervisor and I explained that this woman had the nerve to not only treat me rudely and condescended with a condescending attitude, but she laughed at me when I'm dealing with this. That's the last thing I needed. Unbelievable. That just shows these people don't have a fucking clue. And there's no reason in the world that a drug to treat my restless leg syndrome should cost $800 a month. I promise you, I don't know what the ingredients cost or anything like that, but it probably costs them a buck a piece, if that. And that's why we needed Bernie Sanders as president. Period. So anyway, that's why I wasn't here yesterday, and I'm sorry about that. I take magnesium. So Elaine's like, you need magnesium. Other people are going to tell me I need iron. I take an iron supplement. I have tried everything. I've suffered with restless leg syndrome since 1997. Believe me, I've tried every home remedy, every prescription remedy, every possible remedy out there. And the patches don't work all the time. There are still nights I'm up all night. So anyway, that's that. I was going to share with you, let's see, is it still patented? I don't know. I have no idea. I just think it's not that common a drug, so they're not going to make a generic. You know, it's used to treat Parkinson's disease and restless leg syndrome. All right, so best laid plans and all. I was going to read to you an article that was on CNN.com 2 days ago, written by a judge, a Republican judge named J. Michael Luttig, who was named, put on the court by George W. Bush. Yeah, back in the 90s. And the headline is "The Republican Blueprint to Steal the 2024 Election." This guy's no liberal. He is a real conservative, but he's a judge and he knows the law. The thing is, we have a guest coming on in about 10 minutes, and this is a lengthy piece. So I'm not going to have time to read it, to read the whole thing for you, because I went on too long with my my tales of woe. But I'm going to post it on the blog today where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/4-29-22. And you need to read it. Maybe I'll share it next week. I'm just not going to have time today. But I want you to read it because the threat is real. The coup is real. What they did last year was a dry run for what they're planning to do, or in 2020, for what they're planning to do in 2024. So we definitely have our work cut out for us. All right. So let's see. We do have a guest coming up, and that's the other thing. I've been excited to speak with this person since she won her first election. I guess it's 5 years ago now. I still remember the day the news story came on that a woman in Virginia, a trans woman in Virginia, became the first trans person to win a seat in a state assembly. Her name is Danica Rome, and she's in Virginia. And I remember when the news story came on and my husband said, "Ooh, sounds like she'd be a great guest for the Nicole Sandler show." And I filed it away. I said, yeah, absolutely. And turns out she's now got a book out. So we're going to join her in just a few minutes. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Since I just went through my whole story of, you know, my whole pity party, health insurance extortionists story, and how I can't afford the medication that's going to, you know, hopefully keep me able to function anymore, I'm going to do what I don't do often enough. This program doesn't run commercials for the most part. Occasionally I do, but not often. And when I do, they're for, you know, Progressive Voices, not for me personally. I don't often do the fundraising pitches just because I hate asking for money. But this program is, and the show is not behind a paywall. So it's free for everyone. But I operate on the old public radio system where I run off of your donations. But again, I hate asking for money. And so I found this newfound talent during the pandemic. So I paint. I paint pet portraits and other things. Some of you have gotten my other paintings. But I figured, you know, you can do one of two things, or I guess you can do one of three things. You can keep enjoying the show and no problem. If you can't afford it, if you're in the same boat I'm in, please stay, listen, share, participate. Don't worry about it. But if you can't afford it, I hope you'll chip in and make either a one-time or an ongoing monthly contribution to the show, because it's what keeps me going. And if you don't, you know, if you, like me, think radio should be free, because that's how it always was, times change, then maybe purchase one of my paintings. Okay, I will gladly paint a custom pet portrait for you. And for Mother's Day, it makes a wonderful, wonderful gift. Commercial time.
Mother's Day is coming up fast, and once again, you're in search of the perfect gift. How about a custom portrait of her fur babies? You know, the ones who don't grow up and leave home. You could commission a portrait and present her with the finished painting, or make the collaboration part of the special gift. I'm Nicole Sandler, and for the past couple of years, I've been painting custom pet portraits. What sets me apart from the others is my collaborative process. I work with you or her, deciding on the perfect photo to use for reference, the size, background, and other details. Then I get started. I'll send photos of the painting in progress at different steps along the way and ask you to be brutally honest and tell me any little thing that's wrong or just slightly off. I fix any of those issues and go a bit further and send another photo. The portrait is done when you or she says, "That's it. It's perfect." Whether you present her with a finished portrait or a beautiful gift certificate that also gives her the gift of collaborating on her keepsake pet portrait, this is the personal and unique gift you're looking for. See samples, get more information, and contact me all through paintyourpets.net. That's paintyourpets.net.
What What is up with this Disney boycott? I just don't see how people who say they care about children could be so hateful. Look at these schmucks. Aren't they sick? Wouldn't you think they could find a new shtick? Back to their old culture wars against nearly everything. Look at this crowd, heartless and cold. How many bigots can one party hold? Listening to them, it sure seems they hate nearly everyone. They've got homophobes, racists, and sexists. Anti-immigrant scumbags galore. You want QAnoners? They're the nexus. So they choose the side of Ted Cruz. Need I say more? I want to say to these people, hello? What is the point of this pointless protest? Boycotting Disney, I'll make them say, what's the word? They tried this stunt a few years ago when Disney gave benefits to gay couples. Didn't work then, so repeating it's, what do you call it? Oh yeah, dumb. They say they'll go to Dollywood. Who she is, they've clearly misunderstood. What idiocy, who wants to be part of their herd? Haven't they thought if they boycott Disney completely, they'll lose A&E, ESPN, ABC, and Pixar, and Touchstone, and FX, etc. Besides, it's no joke, Disney's not woke. Sure, they responded, but not fleetly. It took pressure till they said, yes, yeah, sure, we'll take a stand, sort of. To any progress, all these jerks object, including the casting of cartoon characters. Claiming they gotta be white is friggin' absurd. Oh well, let him go, 'cause if they run, this place would be a whole lot more fun. Wish they could see. No one nice wants to be part of their herd.
Lauren Mayer. part of their herd. Yeah, you know, I'm down here in Florida and what's his name? More on death sentence, or, you know, Ron DeSantis, as I now call him, is wreaking havoc on the state and everywhere else. All right. So I want to bring in our guests. And of course, my whole shot got messed up here. What am I doing? Oh, my goodness. All right. Hold on. I got to bring I want to bring Danica Rome in. And Danica, I'm just going to bring your picture in while I get our shot set up again, because the gremlins attack me all the time. So there's Danica. Hey there. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Hi, Nicole. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for the invitation. Oh, it's
my pleasure to have you here. Well, you've got a new book out, and it's called Burn the Page, a true story of torching doubts, blazing trails, and igniting change. Why Burn the Page?
Well, so the reason I decided to name my book Burn the Page is because I want to encourage people to set fire to the stories they don't want to be in anymore and own their own narrative. The book is so much about what happens when you can just feel that you can flip the script on negativity, when you can address all those sort of stories where you see other people that sometimes get things wrong about you, that sometimes they have malicious intent and they attack you, and sometimes they mean well, but it just didn't come out right. And this is to encourage you as a listener and you as the reader of Burn the Page to make sure that you are able to own your own narrative and control your own story, which is really, you know, where I came from and why I was able to win three campaigns already. And, you know, when I ran my first race in 2017 as a transgender metalhead reporter, Yevgeny Stepan, vegetarian, who was unemployed, uninsured, and driving a $324.92 Dodge Shadow that was colored primer blue, as in primer and blue. You know, that was kind of a little thing where it was like, you know what? Yeah, I've got a lot of identities. I've got a lot of things going on. But, you know, at the same time, I did not come from central casting. And that's okay, because government shouldn't be, elected government shouldn't be the sole domain of the rich and powerful. It should be for us, too. People who are broken, people yes. with different diverse backgrounds should be able to run for office. And not only did I run, but we unseated a 26-year, 13-term incumbent who was the self-described chief homophobe of Virginia. And so what y'all are going through in Florida, look, we faced it. We've done it. And have come up the other end. And since then, we've now passed 32 of my bills into law since my first term. And I'm only two and a half terms into my elected career right now, so we're doing pretty well.
That's awesome, and congratulations on that. So, you put a whole lot into that intro, and I thank you for it. The book tells your story leading up to when you decided to run for office, and you know what brought you here. Now, you use the phrase. I have so many notes here because there's a million things I wanted to ask you, but tell me again how you described yourself.
Okay, let's see if I'll just do this all in one fell swoop here.
I got it. Transgender, metalhead, reporter, Yevgeny, stepmom, vegetarian.
Yes. All of that is accurate, yeah.
And, I love it. You're owning who you are, which is what we all have to do, right? But yes. you didn't set out to be a politician or to serve the public. You were a journalist and a musician. Let's first talk about the music, because music is a big part of my life too. I came from music radio because I can't play. I don't have the talent to perform, so I played other people's music on the radio. You were a heavy metal freak, yeah, and you fronted a band.
Yeah, well, I still am on the former, and on the latter, my band, you know, ran from 2006 to 2017 till a month after I won my primary in 2017, which I very much talk about in the book, Burn the Page. There's a lot of fun stories with that. And by the way, just one side note on this. Yeah, I was a reporter. I was a newspaper reporter for 10 and a half years. And to me, that is also part of public service. You know, even though you're obviously, you know, writing in that case for a for-profit corporation at that point, the fact of the matter is my job was to hold government officials accountable. And that's what I did for 10 and a half years, including 9 years, 2 months, and 2 weeks right here in Prince William County in the district I now serve, my lifelong home community. And so, yeah, I would certainly, you know, put, newspaper reporting as part of public service.
Without a doubt. And I'm glad you brought that up. Definitely. But working in journalism is not all glamour, and it's not all, you know, it's not, you know, it's not what you see when you watch cable news or you read a big newspaper. A lot of journalists work in small town newspapers, small town news gathering, and those entities are dying off. It's really hard. And before they were dying off, they were underfunded. So those jobs didn't necessarily pay well. And there were times that you worked at two papers at the same time.
Well, so the Gainesville Times and the Prince William Times were part of the same chain, and everything is basically part of the same publication. So my editor and I were responsible for both, papers. One was just focused on Western Prince William and one was more broad. But I did work two full-time jobs for 4 out of 5 years at one point, including spending 3.5 years as a staff writer at the Hotline, which is part of the National Journal in Washington, D.C., where I was covering federal and state campaigns, you know, from 6-something in the morning until mid-afternoon. And then I would go haul across 66 and I would come back for, you know, go cover, you know, a sports game or go cover a town hall meeting or go interview a U.S. senator or go attend an execution, which I did see, in Jared, Virginia in 2010. So, yeah, I mean, there's all of that. And I worked, you know, and I also spent about another year and a third as a staff writer for Yoga Alliance, where I was, you know, writing about the yoga industry, for example. So I was, during all that time, you know, while also running a band and doing all that sort of stuff and beginning my transition to go along with it, you know, it was a very hectic time, but in part I had to do that because simply being a reporter at one job did not pay the bills. My starting salary in 2016 or 2006, first year out of college, was $24,000. Yeah. And when I ended my stay at the Gainesville Times, Prince William Times, I was still making less than $29,000. And the job I took after that, I got paid $23,700 when you actually add up the $15 an hour for 30 hours a week with no benefits. So, you know, it's tough. And at the same time, you know, this, it is so sad to see what happens with these community papers, which is why in my work in the General Assembly, we've actually passed my shield law to prevent reporters from being jailed for protecting the identity of a confidential source. That was HB 113 in 2020. That I'm really proud of because, you know, we need to encourage people to pursue the profession and be able to do their jobs and do them well. We also passed a bill from now former delegate Chris Hurst to prevent censorship of college newspaper reporters, for example, or college news reporters in general. These people have to understand that reporters are not PR agents.
Right.
Reporters are, you know, their job is government accountability at the end of the day, and being neutral, dispassionate third-party observers who vet facts, go through an editorial process, and come out the other end. This is something I'm very, very passionate about. And, you know, I'm one of the, if not the strongest advocates in the Virginia General Assembly for making sure that the Freedom of Information Act is actually accessible to requesters, so that the public has the ability to get their public documents. And for all of the things going wrong in Florida right now, in terms of the state government and everything, the one thing Florida does particularly well is its Sunshine Act. Its Sunshine Act is one of the best, if not the best, in the country.
Yeah, and except
I would love to see Virginia adopt that.
Except with this guy in office right now, who I call DeSatan, because it fits more than anything else at the moment. He does the Sunshine Act is you have to be transparent about your any work that the assembly, that the state legislature does, that the government does, any government official has to be done in the sunshine, allegedly. It has to be done transparently in the open. It's on the books. They don't adhere to it. And especially under DeSantis, he is just... He scares the crap out of me, to be fully honest with you. He is everything that Trump was, but with he's better educated and he actually understands the law and he understands how government works. And therefore, he can malign it. He could pervert it to his uses. He's a frightening character. And the fact that he is being looked at as the next alternative to Trump to run in 2024, everybody should be worried about this guy, and everybody should do their homework to find out who he is, because it scares the crap out of me down here. But anyway, we're not talking about him today. We're talking about you. Danica Rome, the new book is Burn the Page, and you don't hold back. You put it all out on the table. There's, you know, the old sex and drugs and rock and roll. You go through your past history. It's like sex and rock and roll.
Definitely.
Okay.
Gotcha.
But you actually, when you decided to run for office, and we'll get to that in a second, you commissioned an Oppo researcher to find out whatever is out there about you so you could deal with it first. That's a good idea.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And something I absolutely recommend when, for example, I'm now the executive director of Emerge Virginia, which trains Democratic women to run for office. And one of the things I absolutely recommend people do is make sure you find out what's already out there about you. You should look up your own stuff before you launch a campaign. And you should, you know, hire people who do it professionally to look stuff up about you. And that ties in directly to what I was trying to communicate in the book here, which is the importance of being able to know the stories that other people want to tell about you and how to flip the script on it. In my case, one of the fun examples that we use in there, every chapter has like a one word title basically. And then we pull either something from the self-opposition research, from an attack ad that was launched against me, a negative newspaper headline or a bad editorial, whatever. And one of the ones that I use in there is that the self-oppo person found something on Facebook where someone wrote that I had done it when I was 23 years old in 2008. I had performed a keg stand as my friends yelled "suck it" while I was doing it, and then they said that I had picked up a keg and threw it through a window. Seriously.
Ooh, wow.
I was like, whoa, hold on. First two parts true. Last part, I don't have the upper body strength to be able to pull off that feat. And also the person whose apartment it was, that definitely would have resulted in them not getting their security deposit. So the reason I wanted to include that in the book is that sometimes there are things out about you that other people have told that in that particular case, it was just a friend's embellishment trying to make people laugh. But when it showed up in my Oppo file, what it told me was that there are going to be people who are going to see stuff about me on the internet without vetting it, without knowing whether it's right or wrong, and they're just going to run with it. And that's something that we all, I think, need to benefit from, the idea of knowing your history, knowing what's out there, knowing those stories, and reclaiming your narrative, reclaiming your story. And I like to think that with the other attacks that came out, for example, you know, that I go into in each of these chapter titles, where, you know, the Republican Party of Virginia via the candidates themselves were going after me for an old video of my band because we shot a comedy music video that was just designed to make people laugh. And they took this and they just ran with it, right? And they were more or less in their TV ad making me out to be a conceited whore. And my response to that in the book was, conceited? And, you know, like, I wanted to use humor to deflect and diffuse that. Because to me, what are you going to do? Are you just going to curl up on the couch with a body pillow and try to figure out the best fetal position for you to be in as you, you know, sob your way through people being mean to you? Or are you going to say, hey, how do I flip the script on this? How do I make this work for me? And that's exactly what I did and did successfully.
Awesome. Danica Rome is her name, R-O-E-M, for those wondering. And so tell us, you were, a journalist, and then there were times you found yourself not as a working journalist, and you took whatever job you could. You worked at a food place delivering food and cooking, and not exactly what you trained for, and I'm sure not making a lot of money.
Yeah. So I wasn't a cook per se there. I was a delivery driver, but I would also have to do, like, you know, a bunch of stuff in-house, like pouring tzatziki into little cups, right, and like that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, that should tell you something about the state of the journalism industry, where at that point I had 10 years of professional experience, award-winning reporter up and down. And I, you know, because I transitioned, no one wanted to hire me.
And it was
so the jobs I could find were paying, you know, $15 an hour for 30 hours a week with no benefits and $5 an hour plus tip as a delivery driver. It was just, it was hard. And then 12,077 people hired me to be their delegate. You should, you know, I always say, like, I was uninsured for 2.5 years. Trans people shouldn't have to run for office in order to get health insurance.
Well,
you know,
no.
But that's kind of where I was at.
So what made you run for office? You didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to run for office. Somebody reached out to you. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so some of the data that we have from Emerge shows that very often women need to be asked to run for office, whereas men tend to take the initiative. Hmm. That's not universal at all, but it is one of the things that the data just shows. And like a lot of other women, I was asked, you know, to run by the 2015 Democratic nominee for the 13th district, who had moved out of the district and said, hey, I'm moving out. Have you considered running? You'd be a really good candidate. And then I laughed at it. I just went, huh. And I didn't even, like, you know, go through the email, you know, after that. And then the next day I got a call from Delegate Rip Sullivan, who's recruiting chair for the House Democratic Caucus. And he called and said, hey, have you considered running? You'd be really good. And I knew the issues I wanted to run on right away, like fixing Route 28, for example, and expanding Medicaid. And at the same time, I was able to contrast myself with my delegate, who had been in office since I was 7 years old,
wow,
who had been elected 13 times, no matter whether it was a Democratic year or a Republican year, always found a way to win, right? And he had branded himself the self-described chief homophobe of Virginia, you know, during the 2006 marriage equality fight. And, you know, so I contrasted his record versus what his constituents actually needed from him. And that was, on one hand, to say, look, being inherently exclusionary, that is wrong. And we should call that out. And we should have platforms based on inclusivity, based on justice, based on equality. And not but, and as we do that, let's focus on those core quality of life issues that actually improve people's day-to-day lives, like making sure that our roads are safe to drive on, that you get where you need to go without having to deal with a lot of congestion, that we actually have Medicaid expanded. And since I kept my promise to vote for Medicaid expansion, we've now enrolled more than 650,000 Virginians across the Commonwealth in Medicaid expansion. Those are people who we did not leave uninsured during a worldwide pandemic. And we voted to raise teacher pay repeatedly, which was another one of those issues that we ran on in the first place. So by being able to keep my promises, I've been showing that, hey, I'm actually a good delegate. And of my 32 bills signed into law, 10 of them feed hungry kids.
Oh, wow.
And by the way, as we've done all that, yeah, we've passed three of my pro-LGBTQ equality bills too, because those are also constituent service. Everything to me comes back to constituent service. And politicians who attack their most vulnerable constituents, especially trans kids, they shouldn't be politicians anymore.
Yeah.
And that means we need people to step up and unseat them. And you've got a lot of people who need to be unseated in Florida right now.
Oh my God.
And my call to Democratic women, especially throughout Florida, especially LGBTQ Democratic women, is step up and go run, because we need you right now at the local level, statewide, and probably even federal too.
Please. And I love that. Great advice. And it's not only in Florida. I mean, when you look at what's happening in Texas with the anti-trans legislation, I know they were investigating the parents of a young trans girl for child abuse because they're getting her medical treatment. I mean,
And that's happening across the country, not just Texas.
Right.
This is a current fad of more than 200 anti-LGBTQ bills. Again, I ask anyone, how is it possible that you could be a public servant when you are singling out and stigmatizing and ostracizing and demonizing your own constituents, children who you are driving to suicide, children who don't feel safe to live with you as their representative? What does that say about who you are when you are attacking children?
Right.
That means that you shouldn't be in office anymore. But the only way for that to happen is to have someone replace you by unseating you. And that's my call, is when you see someone who's not representing you well, grab a clipboard. It's time to run. Go get trained. That's what Emerge exists for. That's what the LGBTQ Victory Institute exists for. And it's like I say in the book, this is our America too, and it's time for us to run it.
So when you were talked into running, you were recruited to run, let's put it that way, and you're a first-time candidate, and you're running against this guy, Bob Marshall, who had been in office since 1991. You were just 7 years old. And you beat him? Did you beat him resoundingly? And was your having transitioned, being a trans woman, how did that come into play?
Answer to your first question, yes. It's by 8 points. And the answer to your second question, in terms of, being a trans woman, rather than, just allowing that to be my narrative of the race, I owned my identity, never ran away from it, mm-hmm. very much talked about it. And every headline at the time was either transgender candidate or transgender journalist.
Oh, God.
I just, leaned into it and said, okay, that's fine. Well, you have an entire rest of a story to fill up, or you have entire rest of your airtime to fill up.
Right.
We're going to talk about
what I
am here campaigning about. And yes, equality very much is part of my platform. And I also very much have very specific ideas for fixing Route 28, which, by the way, we're now doing. I also have very specific ideas for what we can do to feed hungry kids, to bring mass transit out to Haymarket and Gainesville, which, by the way, we have now done. As I went through it, I was able to use my skill sets I developed as a reporter that I very much detail in Burn the Page. So when you check it out, you'll see the direct line between what it takes to be a good reporter and what it took to run for office. But beyond politics, to get outside of the realm of government, it's also very much about, imagine other people trying to just keep you down. Imagine other people just at your job or any other walk of life, who just try to make things more difficult for you because they don't want you around or they don't respect your identity. There's a way for you to not only persevere through it, but to thrive. And I always say you can succeed because of who you are, not despite it, and not for what discriminatory politicians tell you you're supposed to be. You be you better than anyone else ever could, because you're the only one who ever can.
It seems, to talking like this, it seems so simple. Tell the truth. Embrace your authentic self. Be who you are and tell the truth. It should be easy, but for so many politicians, they just can't do it. Now, one phrase comes up that I think you relied on that maybe was a mantra: quality conversations.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to just lit drop a whole bunch of doors and let people just pick up your flyer And in the 1.8 seconds that they're going to actually look it over and throw it in the garbage, you hope you get your message across. And it's very different to put that flyer in someone's hand yourself and say, hi, this is my name. What's your name? It's nice to meet you. And these are the issues I'm running on, but I want to hear from you. What's important to you? And then show them, write down on your clipboard, or if you're using minivan, whatever, type into your phone. Yeah, I'm a pen and pad reporter, so I'm still a pen and pad person at the door. I always write my personal cell phone number when I'm out knocking on doors. So if my constituents want to reach me, they can. You know, I try to make myself as, and that's not like, you know, like my government number or something. You know, when you want to talk to me, you know, you call me. And that's just fine. Because, you know, like one of the things I think people say, like, oh, you mean, so you just give your number out? Well, you know, what if someone does, I'm like, I was a reporter for 10 and a half years. I can go crazy. Like, uh-huh. That's fine. But most of the time, my constituents only reach out to me when they need help with something. You usually don't contact your government official unless something's gone wrong. Not because you're just, you know, happy to chat on the phone.
Without a doubt. And I appreciate that you do that. And I'm always surprised when a representative of any sort does give me their personal phone number. But then I think, well, that's how it should be. You know, my congressman now is Ted Deutch. He's retiring. But I first met him when he was in the state legislature. And I had his cell phone number from back then. And so when I had a problem, when I left the hospital, this is an aside, obviously, I had surgery for lung cancer. And they had just put these new rules in effect to get opioids. And I couldn't get my prescription filled at a pharmacy. It was ridiculous. I get that they want to stop the epidemic of, you know, overdoses. But my God, I was coming out of the hospital. I couldn't fill a prescription. But I had his number. That's the point. Anyway. Danica, it sounds like you're doing an amazing job. And the next logical question would be, what's next? Now, you are running for re-election and it's in Virginia. It's the House of Delegates.
Will be running for the Virginia General Assembly next year in 2023 to find out what seat. Tune in on May 9th.
Okay. See, that's the thing. That was your cryptic thing. You said May 9th, and I was going to ask, that's like 2 weeks away. If we could jump the gun, I guess we have to wait till May 9th. Where do we go for the announcement?
Just tune on my social media. You'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, Virginia, after you won your seat, the entire House of Delegates flipped. And so under Democratic control, but you had a problem with the governor's race this past year. What do you think was the problem? What went wrong?
Well, so, you know, we got into the majority during my first reelection after 2019. And during 2020 and 2021, you know, Virginia went from being one of the most hostile states in the country for voting rights, for LGBTQ equality, for environment, so much else, to now being a nationwide leader in voting rights, nationwide leader in LGBTQ equality, to being the 38th state to vote in favor of ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment, which is now tattooed on my arm, quite literally.
Wow.
And, you know, at the same time, last year, I could identify 1,000 things that went wrong in that 2021 campaign. You know, that campaign was lost on a field margin. And when we look and we see that the Democratic nominee at the top of the ticket was winning all 9 localities of Northern Virginia by double digits and then still ends up losing a very close election, and then we see about a dozen or so localities in rural areas that voted more than 80% Republican, up to 87% in some cases, it means that we did not do the work west of I-81. We gave up on the spine of Virginia. You cannot write off hundreds of miles of Virginia and expect to be competitive. You just can't. And so that's one of the things I'm very strongly working to turn around right now. And in fact, on Monday, I have a trip down to Blacksburg to make sure that we are doing that. And one of the first, you know, trips that I took as executive director of Emerge Virginia was into Strasburg, into the Speaker of the Virginia House's district, to talk with our folks over at Rural Ground Game for what can we do along the 300 some odd miles of I-81 and points west to, you know, reestablish who we are. And remember, former U.S. Senator Jim Webb won the coal fields in 2006. Mark Warner swept the coal fields in 2008. It was not that long ago where Democrats were competitive there. There are still plenty of people who remember pulling a Democratic lever or filling out a Democratic ballot. We can still win or we can at the very least be competitive. But the fact that the last precinct any Democratic candidate in 2021 won in terms of the West was in Radford, that's still hours east of the Kentucky state line. That means we did something fundamentally wrong. We need to fix it. And I'm dedicated to doing my part to fixing it while at the same time still being the best at constituent service I could be for the people of Western Prince William and Greater Manassas.
You're awesome. I love listening to you. And, you know, I have a friend who lives in West Virginia, who's a trans woman, who is also running for the state assembly there. Do you know Robin Kincaid?
I do not personally know Robin Kincaid.
She's a radio host too. She's been doing radio for years. In fact, doing it before she transitioned. I knew her for many years as Bob Kincaid. She only transitioned probably within the last year.
Please don't ever dead name someone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't know that was the thing. And she, you know, she talks about it too, but it's still recent and she went through it all very, very publicly and is now running, still doing her radio show. The head on radio network is where, you know, she's online as well, but she put it all out there just a couple of months ago, declared her candidacy, and she's all in running. You should be on her show because I think you could give her some great advice. Maybe I'll put her in contact with your publicist or something. But what advice do you give for her other than be your real authentic self?
The first thing is go get trained. This is why the LGBTQ Victory Institute's campaign training program exists, which I went through in 2016. This is also why Emerge exists. And I went through Emerge Virginia's boot camp in 2017 in that February. And right now, as I'm speaking, we are in the midst of our national virtual boot camp at Emerge. And tomorrow I'm actually the lead facilitator of the day for our national boot camp for the, you know, amazing cohort of Democratic women from across the country, a number of whom are LGBTQ, including a trans woman here in Virginia, actually, who's the second out trans elected official we've actually elected. So, you know, like Emerge is for Democratic women of all sorts. And you know what? Go get trained, learn how to run for office, and then go do it. That's exactly what I did. And it's irreplaceable.
Without a doubt. And you are Virginia. Were you born there?
I'm a lifer. I'm a Manassas lifer. Absolutely.
And it sounds like you don't want to maybe go to Congress. You want to stay and make Virginia even better.
Yeah, look, I spent 3.5 years covering federal politics for the hotline. I did my time in D.C. I did it. You know, I'm good.
I hear you. Well, the book is out just this week. Congratulations. It's called Burn the Page, A True Story of Torching Doubts, Blazing Trails, and Igniting Change. Danica Rome, congratulations on the book and this great career choice, because it sounds like you finally found where you're supposed to be.
Well, thank you so much, Nicole. I'm so grateful for you. And thank you again for just the opportunity to speak to you and your listeners and viewers today. Oh, I genuinely appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. And very quickly, if someone wanted to hear your music, is Cab Ride Home? Is there stuff out there that we can find?
Yes, there is. Okay. It's on Bandcamp. You know, the band's been disbanded since 2017. We played our last show a month after I won my primary in 2017. But wow. Music very much still exists out there.
Okay. So the band is Cab Ride Home. I know a bunch of us are going to go Google it and check out your music.
The Crash the Gate album. That's
Crash the Gate? Okay. You got it. Danica Rome, thank you so much. It was great to meet you. Like I said, I was intrigued when I first heard of your first victory some years ago. And I've been, you know, just reading about you. And when I was thrilled when I saw you had a book, I'm like, okay, now I got to get her on the show. So thank you for joining us and thank you for writing it. And most importantly, thank you for the work you're doing, because it sounds like you're doing a great job.
Gratitude for you as well. And thank you for getting that progressive message out there. And hey, folks, let's go win some damn elections, will we? Let's go flip some seats.
Please. All right. Thanks for joining us. And hopefully we'll talk again.
Absolutely. Take care. Thanks
you
so
too. Bye-bye. Thank you. Danica Rome, everybody. And yes, check out the book because it's really good. And her story is just wonderful. And she holds nothing back. Again, it's what I was saying before. Honesty. Be yourself. Be real. Because if you're not, they can tell. Just like I always say, this microphone is a great lie detector. I'm a shitty liar anyway, but you can tell if I'm lying. You usually can. unless you're someone like, you know, Tucker Carlson, where you just lie for a living and you don't know the difference anymore because that's all you do. All right, I digress. With that, we're done. It's a weekend. Yes. My kid is here. Allison, you want to say hi? There she is. Allison's here. So I'm going to go hang with my child. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. See you Monday with Ari Raben-Haft on Bernie Sanders. It'll be a good one, I promise. All right. With that, we're done. I will leave you with the news. And thank you, as always, for listening. And thanks for dealing with my story. And buy a pet portrait. Mother's Day is a week away. All right? Okay. All right. Here's the news. Bye.
Time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden on Thursday asked Congress for $33 billion in military, humanitarian, and economic aid to Ukraine as Russia's invasion is now on its third month and Russian forces intensify their offensive in eastern Ukraine. The package, which would include more than $20 billion in military and security assistance, is bigger than many nations' annual defense budget and the largest funding proposal for Ukraine since the war began. The Biden administration had already announced $800 million in artillery, armed drones, and other weapons for Ukraine, and they're also asking for new authority to rapidly transfer arms to Ukraine from the Pentagon's arsenal. The president's saying it's not cheap, but caving to aggression is going to be more costly. Meanwhile, attacks by Russia are ramping up. They hit Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, with 5 cruise missiles on Thursday, killing at least one person and injuring several others in the most intense attack on the city since Russian forces retreated from the area about 2 weeks ago. The shelling occurred an hour after President Zelensky held a news conference with the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who called Ukraine under Russia's invasion, quote, an epicenter of unbearable heartache and pain. In related news, Germany has reportedly finally dropped its opposition to banning Russian oil imports coming into the EU, which is paving the way now for a full ban. Russia would still account for about 40% of the EU's natural gas imports. Meanwhile, Ukraine laid out its first specific accusations of war crimes committed by Russian troops, accusing 10 soldiers of the torture and murder of civilians in the town of Bucha. Sources say Putin wants to overtake that strategic region in time for the country's May 9th Victory Day celebration, which marks the defeat of Nazi Germany in Europe in 1945. Hey, Vlad, these aren't Germans. They're Ukrainians. And it's not 1945, it's 2022. Stop it already. Like he's listening. Well, economic news delivered Thursday certainly wasn't good, but it wasn't horrible either. The U.S. economy did shrink by 1.4% in the first quarter of 2022, the first such retreat since early in the pandemic. About 0.8% of the slide stemmed from decisions by businesses to buy goods aggressively before the 2021 holiday shopping season so they wouldn't get caught short by supply shortages during the winter coronavirus surge. It turned out to be unnecessary and obviously costly. Economists said the slowdown was unlikely to build into a recession because economic fundamentals remained strong despite high inflation, the war in Ukraine, and ongoing pandemic worries. Rising wages have resulted in strong consumer spending, and companies were able to make big investments thanks to higher profits. So see, you got to take the bad along with the good. Moderna has now formally requested emergency use authorization for its COVID-19 vaccine for children aged 6 months to 6 years. That would make it the first shot available for children under the age of 5. Already, roughly 13 million cases of COVID-19 have been reported in those aged 18 and younger. In the U.S., the 7-day rolling average of newly reported cases is just above 52,000 per day. Meanwhile, residents in Beijing began taking mandatory COVID-19 tests as a rising number of cases have invoked fears of a Shanghai-like lockdown there. So, 16 states, Washington, D.C., and some environmental activist groups have all filed lawsuits seeking to block the U.S. Postal Service from buying 148,000 gas-powered delivery trucks over the next 10 years.
The Postal Service, still inexplicably headed by Louis DeJoy, resisted pressure to replenish its fleet with electric vehicles, as prescribed in new rules from the Biden administration to reduce the federal government's carbon emissions in the name of fighting climate change. Suits by the state attorneys general, Earth Justice, and the National Resources Defense Council argue that the Postal Service relied on bad calculations to defend the decision to buy trucks getting 8.6 miles to the gallon, barely more than its current 30-year-old vehicle fleet. A2 Oklahoma, the Oklahoma House on Thursday approved a Texas-style proposal to ban abortion at about 6 weeks into a pregnancy, before most women even realize they're pregnant. The vote in the Republican-controlled chamber was 68-12. The bill now goes to the Republican governor, Kevin Stitt, who is expected to sign it. It would take effect immediately. But Planned Parenthood has filed a new challenge to this law and a near-total abortion ban that Stitt has already signed. These measures are the latest restrictions passed in Republican-led states, defying long-standing Supreme Court precedents protecting women's right to an abortion up to fetal viability at about 24 weeks. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.